The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you doing?
Boker Tov, an exciting day for a lot of American Olim. 240 arrived. This is kind of the main day where all the press are gathered at Ben-Gurion Airport to welcome plane loads of New Olim coming under the auspices of Nefesh B'Nefesh, chartering a plane, summertime in Israel, and of course getting ready for the new school year. So this is when hundreds of New Olim are making their way to Israel. It's always an exciting time of the year, and a lot of expectations for these people. So we wish them a lot of luck as they make their new lives in Israel. And it's astonishing how many New Olim are still making their way to Israel from all over the world, from the United States, from North America, from South America, from Europe, from South Africa. A lot of people still deciding to come and put their future in with the State of Israel. And of course, you know, for us, it's always great to welcome new people. So a lot of excitement. And just one thing before we get into the main things that we want to talk about, Howard, I need to offer an apology for confusing people yesterday. Thank you to those people who wrote in to say the facts that I gave were incorrect. I was confused and I succeeded in confusing a lot of you. So I'm happy that there are some people who are listening and awake and are happy to pick me out for incorrect information. So I'd like to just correct what I said yesterday about the Yamina Party, which is now the new Ayelet Shaked grouping that we spoke about in the context of Bezalel Smotrich yesterday. He is part of the grouping, as opposed to what I said yesterday. And he does have the third seat on the list of the Yamina Party. This is, as I say, the new name that's been given to the Ayelet Shaked grouping. She is number one on the list. And of course, we have Rabbi Rafi Peretz, who has the second position on the list. And third is Bezalel Smotrich, as was correctly pointed out by one of the listeners, with Naftali Bennett taking fourth place on that grouping. It's the new right-wing parties. It's got the Jewish Home, Tikuma. And so I apologize for confusing people yesterday, and I hope that that now makes sense. It's all very confusing with so many different things going on the right wing of Israeli politics, who's in and who's out of these different groups.
And the point is, you could have been wrong yesterday. Situation. You could have been wrong yesterday and perfectly right today, given the way, given the changes and the speed that it's happening. All right. Thanks, Anthony. Thanks for clarifying that. A few people did come through to me during the show and then still after the show querying that. So thanks to everybody for doing so. The Palestinian Authority has been asked by the United Nations Special Committee to explain hate speech and anti-Semitism that it is accused of perpetrating. Have they responded, and why has this happened? I mean, this has been going on for years, and obviously it's been certainly a complaint by many people on more on the Israel side of the aisle. What's happened to precipitate this?
Well, it's a very big surprise for many of us because, as you rightly point out, the Palestinian Authority has been perpetrating hate speech for the longest time already. And now we have this first ever review conducted by a committee called the United Nations Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination. And they held their meeting in Geneva yesterday. And there were a number of points that the Palestinian Authority was asked to answer to about perpetration of hate speech and anti-Semitism. And in particular, there was reference to the fact that the Palestinian Authority has in its school books a lot of information which is considered to be the perpetration of hate speech and anti-Semitism. And it was interesting that now, under the auspices of the United Nations, suddenly the Palestinian Authority is being asked to answer to these accusations, which is really a very big change from what we've seen in the past. And it was interesting to see how the Palestinian Authority delegation, who was present at the hearing, decided to respond. The main representative there was a foreign ministry representative from the Palestinian Authority. This was the person who led the delegation. There were apparently about a dozen officials, all in all, who were there from the Palestinian Authority. And the person representing, the main representative said that They do not represent against any citizens based on ethnicity, religion, or sex, which I think is a fair point because, of course, Jews are not citizens of the Palestinian Authority. So I think that that would be a fair statement to make, and we could not argue with it. But it doesn't mean that they are not responsible for perpetrating hate speech and anti-Semitism. But, of course, the Palestinian Authority then used the opportunity to say that the main problem, of course, is that Palestinians are being denied their rights, and of course there is a narrative to spread untruths about them, and so you know this is of course then being turned into why the Palestinians are being discriminated against, rather than having the opportunity to answer to why they are in fact conducting discriminatory behavior and, of course, perpetrating this in their school books and in the education system in general. So we don't really have a proper answer to why they're doing that. But I certainly hope that this committee, which is something relatively new, and in particular we have to give credit to one of the committee members, Chin Sung Chung of South Korea, who was really the person who seemed to dig deep into what's going on in the Palestinian Authority. So there is cause for hope where, you know, finally one of the main perpetrators or one of the key perpetrators in this particular region of hate speech and anti-Semitism is being held to account. It's not clear where this is all going to go. In other words, you know, if the Palestinian Authority doesn't give adequate answers or if they don't take remedial action, I'm not sure that there's necessarily going to be any severe consequences for them. But at least we know that they're being asked difficult questions, and let's hope that, you know, this can somehow make a difference to the way that they're conducting their business, and particularly how they're educating their children, which has always been a gripe of mine, that I feel we have no possibility of creating peace in this environment when children are being educated to hate. And as long as that's going to continue, unfortunately, the prospects of peace are going to simply go away from us.
Absolutely, and the fact that they just use this as an opportunity to turn it around just shows how difficult it is to make progress in this area.
Absolutely, you know, and I don't necessarily hold out much hope that this committee by itself will make a huge difference, but hopefully it's just a starting point and will make, you know, member states of the United Nations better aware. At least those who have some sort of an independent point of view, rather than those who are there to try to follow a particular agenda. But, you know, this is a pleasing development from an organization, the United Nations, which generally speaking has, you know, been the home for various committees and sub-organizations that have really been very critical of Israel and not at all held the Palestinian Authority to account for its actions.
Absolutely. Hamas is reported to be acting to prevent insurgents from infiltrating to Israel across the border. Is this consistent now with Hamas's policy towards Israel?
Well, it's difficult to say really what their policy is, but, you know, all the time that action is being taken, even if it's in isolation, to prevent people from approaching the security fence, from, you know, perpetrating acts across the border, and particularly from crossing the border, of course, we have to welcome that. But the problem is, you know, Hamas acts with a very, very different objectives and in very different ways, which is very inconsistent. And so the messages that are being sent to the Palestinians, to the people living in Gaza, is not clear. Because on the one hand, Hamas is inviting people to come to the Friday protests and to potentially commit violent acts along the border and to protest against Israel. And on the other hand, they are now apparently trying to prevent people from approaching the security event. So I don't know whether this might be different arms of the same organization who are not necessarily coordinated, or whether there might just be some renegade groups within Hamas operating in different ways. There is clearly a good reason why Hamas would wish to prevent people from approaching the border and from acting in a friendly way towards Israel, because Israel has in the past shown its willingness to grant concessions, and quite significant concessions, in exchange for a little bit of peace and quiet. And for example, I hate to tempt fate here, but we haven't seen incendiary balloons, for example, being sent over the border in the numbers that we saw in the past. And this this has really quietened things down along the border in exchange. Israel has really granted concessions, and all the time that, you know, there is an indication that Hamas is trying to put a stop to people infiltrating Israel, attacking Israel, trying to use that Gaza border as a flashpoint. Israel is certainly prepared to grant concessions to allow goods and services to flow more freely into Gaza, to allow people to come from Gaza to accept, you know, to take medical treatment in Israel, or to cross into the West Bank, to the Palestinian Authority area where required, to expand a fishing zone off the coast of Gaza. Israel is certainly prepared to do that and to grant, you know, whatever freedoms and concessions that it can do so, while maintaining security. And so this is certainly welcome. And obviously this will be watched very, very carefully to see if Hamas is prepared to take more actions to prevent these flashpoints along the border.
Yeah, absolutely. A terrible story. I reported it in our news headlines a little bit earlier. An Al stewardess has died after contracting measles on one of her flights. She's been ill for, I think, around about 4 months. Terrible story indeed. Give us some details around this.
So, yeah, I mean, this was Rotem Amitai, 43 years old, a mother of three children. And a really tragic story. I mean, she was just doing her job as you would expect her to do, traveled on a flight from New York to Tel Aviv back in March of this year, and was exposed to somebody who had measles. We recall, you know, the whole measles outbreak and all the drama that surrounded that. We discussed it a few times about why people were not being vaccinated and you know, some of the extreme measures that were being taken by the authorities at that time in New York and in Israel to try and make sure that people were being vaccinated. But unfortunately, Rotem Amitai is a victim of people not vaccinating against measles. And in fact, she was personally responsible to some degree, because while she did have a vaccination against measles, apparently the vaccination comes in two doses and she'd only received one dose. And as a result of that, she was exposed to the illness which she contracted on this flight. And as a result of that, she contracted brain damage quite soon after she fell ill and fell into a coma back in March of this year. And finally, she died in a hospital after her condition severely deteriorated. This is an extremely sad story, but there are lessons to be learned from it, both in terms of El Al, who have now embarked upon a vaccination program for all of its air crew. Everybody working for El Al has been put through a program to make sure that they're all vaccinated against measles. I mean, that's kind of, you know, step number one that should have been done ages ago. And of course, it's also a lesson for the general public about vaccinations. You know, we discussed in some detail the whole attitude towards vaccinations. But in this particular case, unfortunately, people have been ill and have died as a result of not vaccinating. And it just seems so pointless that three young children are left without a mother because of the fact that vaccinations weren't correctly carried out, not by her herself, and of course not by the people who had the illness on the flight that she picked it up from. So I think that this is really a message that we have to learn, while expressing our you know, sympathies to that family and really condoling with them for the grief that they're suffering unnecessarily. Very, very sad story indeed, and I hope that lessons will be learned from this, and that people will understand that vaccinations are really the answer to preventing this kind of thing from happening.
Absolutely right. Time is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, we'll chat to Anthony tomorrow morning at the same time. Here's your news headlines, followed by the news with Zanati Jessica.
This is 101.9 High FM News.
In your headlines, FBI says bullets fired at immigration officers were a targeted attack. Eskom appeals to Ivory Park residents to work with them. And supermarket invites children of staff for a day of fun. You're listening to High FM. Good morning. Several shots were fired yesterday at the United States Immigration.